Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Verse 24 declares that when the material objects are engaged in the Lord's service, they become spiritualized. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport. The absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman, or the Supreme. Right? So that means everything is originally spiritual. Right? There's no such thing technically as material. Material is the illusory concept. Right? Otherwise, the point is the dead matter is not going to be manifest. There's no need. There's nothing for the soul. Right? Krishna doesn't consort with the external potency. So why would there be a manifestation? Right? So the manifestation is simply because the living entities themselves are attached to the idea of being the controller and the enjoyer. Therefore, it's given to them to use in this way. Right? So that there is a manifestation is because of the mentality of the living entities. Does this make sense? Right. So therefore the illusion covers the dead, so therefore we call it matter. Right? Otherwise it's just the external potency of the Lord. So Krishna consciousness, how one can then understand, how one can convert our consciousness. So how is that conversion happening? Right? It's not that we're taking the thing and doing something to it to make it change. What has to change is our perception. Because all it is Krishna's potency, is Brahman, is covered by illusion. Right? So we think it has substance, when it doesn't. Like, why do we like something? Like, why do we like these rocks here in this garden? Right?
They're beautiful.
Yeah, they add a beauty. But what is the beauty of the rock? It's actually Krishna. Right? In other words, beauty is Krishna's quality. And then his internal potency has taken the form of a rock as one of the ways to appreciate Krishna as beauty. Right? And then that has been manifest through the external potency. Right? So the real beauty is Krishna and his internal potency. So it's not the matter. Right? So there is only Brahman, but that's been covered by this material consciousness. You know, so this may be inferior Brahman, but it's still Brahman. Right? And so, you know, its shape, its color, its texture, you know, whatever it qualifies it in the way of aesthetics, you know, in the way of beauty, then that's Krishna and his internal potency. It's just manifest through the external potency, but we call it matter because of our illusion that it's not connected to the Lord. You understand? So, how to convert it to a spiritual platform? Right? It's not by some alchemy. It's by changing the consciousness. you change the consciousness, then you're just seeing the spiritual quality. You just see Brahman and all its different Krishna and his manifestations with all the variety of his, of the internal potency. So then it's just all Brahman. Right? Not all one Brahman, variegated Brahman. But it's just an inferior manifestation of Brahman. Inferior meaning it's not conscious. But what makes it work is Krishna's conscious. So even there it's actually, understand? The actual situation is this conscious. But we only see the dead matter. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. So you're converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman. So our illusion there, then we're seeing the Supreme Lord. So that's how one can see Krishna everywhere. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, after we've understood the concept that the qualities and everything are Brahman, is it necessary for everything that we're dealing with to analyze what are the qualities, what are we attracted, how is it?
If it's a distraction, yes. If it's not a distraction, don't worry about it.
Okay.
You're like this blanket, you never even think about it, then don't worry about it. You analyze those things that have value to you and see that those are connected to the Lord. Like that. Does that make sense? Because you're engaging your body, mind, and words. So you have a particular kind of body, particular kind of mind, particular kind of words. So that's going to connect with the rest of the material manifestation in a certain way. You know what I'm saying? Like music will have a connection with musical instruments and other things like that, not with, let's say, a car. You know what I'm saying? I wonder if that'd be interesting. You know, line up a bunch of cars, you know, and have them all running, and then they know how far to push the pedal, you know, like vroom, 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 like that. They could do something. That would be interesting, right? Definitely get you on a variety show, that one, though. Okay. Does that make sense? So there's no connection. So therefore there's no need to worry about it. Like a thermometer, what does it do?
Measures temperature,
right? It doesn't have to paint. It doesn't have to do something else. Right? It doesn't have to hammer nails or take out screws or iron clothes. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to do any of that. So it only works with its field. So your conditioned nature has a particular field. Right? That's, it'll be able to see there. That's why you should do your duty, not someone else's. Because in your duty, though you can do the work, is there more to it?
Yeah.
You understand? It means in any work, there's the consciousness that goes with it. There's, you know, the whole field has to be considered. But if it's not your nature, you're going to deal with it without considering all that. So it won't be very efficient. That's why you shouldn't do someone else's work. Because you won't do it well. The concept of the Vedic system is that whatever you do it well. So if everybody's doing well, then the whole society is very prosperous, is very, very well, nicely run. But if everybody's doing something that they're not supposed to be doing, then there's a problem. Right? Just like this. Let us say you have an Ayurvedic doctor, okay? And he has not come in contact with, you know, how you say, the, you know, business, concepts of business. So, how much does this medicine cost?
Nothing.
Yeah, very little, right? And he can tell you diets and lifestyle changes to actually make yourself, how you'll get healthy and how you'll keep from getting sick. So that means he'll also help you how to not come back to him. Okay. Now let's say a businessman is involved. Okay? And he takes these Ayurvedic doctors. Okay? Now what? Now how much will it cost?
A lot.
A lot, right? You want a pulse diagnosis, it costs you $300. Right? They do it for free. It's just part of the thing, you know? Does that make sense? You know, the medicines become very expensive, this and that. You know, what happens when they get more involved, right? They open a hospital. Then you start talking tens of thousands, hundreds of millions. Why? Because a Vaishya is not supposed to be involved in medicine. It's not their business. It's a brahminical job. So they do, you can say they do well. But they do well at what? At medicine or at making money? They do well at making money. Though to make money, the medicine has to be working to some degree. Otherwise, why would anybody take your product, right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. You understand? That's why, even though you could say, well, they do a nice job, on one level, yes, but on another level, no. Does that make sense? So that's why you only worry about those things that you actually have the nature for. But at the same time, is you don't define your nature. Shastra defines it. Otherwise, there'd be areas where you feel it's not important. Yes?
Someone was asking a question about these points that you bring up about seeing Krishna in as Brahman in that. And I think very important to understand that it is Brahman, it's not Krishna himself, because this person was saying, if I interact with my husband and I see that's Krishna, then I'm having a relationship with Krishna, I mean, that's...
That turns a bit, that's what the Sahajiyas do that, you know, because that's called Jugal, we'll get in that in the third year, that's Jugal Bhajan, you know, like that. So they're Radha and Krishna, and, you know, like this, you know, it gets a little bit rough. It's not time. No, the point is that's why Krishna, after saying these first two verses of the Chatur Shloki, then the third one he says, but I, as a person, am separate from that. So it's the potency. It's made anything. Everything is working because of a potency. Right? Because if there's no potency, what would it be doing? It won't be doing anything. Right? That's the whole thing. Because if they're seeing Krishna, but the point is means as a person and all that, what's their relationship with Krishna as a person? And what would they be doing? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they wouldn't be having an interaction with Krishna in this way, like the husband. You know, it's just, that wouldn't be going on. You know what I'm saying? So that's why you have to be able to distinguish between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They're non-different, but at the same time they are different. So you have to know what to do with what. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, they all have their purposes. That's the difficulty with these things, is that as these subtleties, it means if the subtleties are not there, then so many things are mistaken because we don't understand the tools of which to work with. But at the same time, if the tools are not understood, you can also have problems. But if I go into the kitchen and, you know, you want to cook lunch and you have so many vegetables there, what if there's no knives? Right? It'd be very difficult. I mean, you can work out something, but, you know, it would be more difficult. Right? So, therefore, without the tools, you know, in this case, the knife, it becomes harder to operate. So, devotees know that they, you know, we have the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but then the problem is the cultural tools that are necessary for social interaction. Then that, not understanding those or not having them, then there's a lot of problem, right? But now, if you have the knife, and now that'll make it so you can cut all the vegetables and very nice, what is the other side that you have to watch out for? Yeah, you have to know how to handle the knife, otherwise you'll get cut. You know? So in the one, it's hard to cook because there's no knife. The other, you get cut, you also don't cook. You know, because you're at the hospital, right? And then you have to deal with all those Vaishyas who run the hospital, so, you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money. You know, does that make sense? So this is the point is, it's one has to be very mature. When you go, oh, why can't it be so easy and this and that? That's okay, but what about the rest of your life? You know, is it that simple and easy and everything? But generally not. No, we have very sophisticated desires. You know, we want this car and that watch and this computer, and it's got to have these, you know, components and this much RAM and this much hard drive. So, please, if life was simple, why bother with all that? You know, just, you know, whatever computer comes along, take that. You know, does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Okay? Yes.
Right, in that example you gave of the when the Vaishyas run the hospital and has the doctors working under him, is it the, in that example, is it the doctors or the Vaishya or both of them who are not performing their own duty?
Are the doctor who's not performing the doctor the Vaishyas of, okay. But the point is are doctors supposed to be doing doctor stuff?
Yes.
Okay. So how would they not be doing their duty?
I mean,
you understand?
Yeah.
So they're situated what they're doing.
Okay.
Vaishyas aren't supposed to be doing that.
Okay.
Right? You know what I'm saying? If Vaishya likes what a Brahmin does, you know, he can give some charity to him and like that, and then he can go and perform all these things nicely. But it's the Vaishyas aren't supposed to be involved, right? But because of the nature of the you know, contemporary community, there's always the point of things like this, they're not appreciated. And so they're not taken care of in this way. So nowadays, if it doesn't make money, it's not seen as something important. It doesn't have substance. You know, so if it makes money, then it's important. If it doesn't make money, it's not important. Does that make sense? But I mean, saying since it's not ideal, then you may have doctors who don't want to get involved, so they'll set themselves up in a different way, you know, to avoid that. Yes.
The doctors. I was in hospital this year in Calcutta, and one doctor he just charged what he thought was reasonable, and didn't, you know. And one of them he came for 5 minutes to tell me about some operation that I didn't have, and cost 1,500 rupees for that 5 minutes.
Yes, of course. So that's then their own personal character. But in this case, it was about should they be involved in medicine or not. So the doctor, the Vaishya shouldn't, you know, but the doctor should. But then, as you're saying, then there's the actual character of the doctor, whether his mentality and the service match, because that's supposed to be is that the body, mind, and word. So the proper mentality, intelligence is supposed to be there along with the skill. So medicine is the field, and then you have the character. You know, so character comes from ashram. That's the thing, is it doesn't come, varna doesn't generate character. No, character has to, someone with character, then they're a Brahmin or Kshatriya. That's why it's guna and karma. Right? You have the quality, you have the nature, then you do that. If you only have the quality, I mean the quality and not the nature, you wouldn't do that. But if you have the nature but not the quality also, it's not proper. But the point is that if you have the nature, you can develop the quality, right? By practice, by association, by sadhana. That's what ashram is. Ashram develops the character. But it doesn't develop nature. Nature is inherent. Right? So the person's, brahminical, then that's just the way it is. Now, whether he has character, he use it properly or not. So that's what we're saying, is the Vaishya, he won't actually understand the purpose of medicine. He'll just look at it how to make money. You know, so as that, then they do a good job. But the point is they're not supposed to do a good job on economics in that field. You know, they're supposed to be selling things, doing trade or generating from the land and the cows or banking. This is what they're supposed to do. So medicine's not on the list. You know what I'm saying? Because medicine's based on the scriptures, so it's not their field. Is that okay? Okay. Verse 24 should not be interpreted in the sense that everything is absolutely identical with Brahman, that only Brahman exists. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains. The commentators have explained that the ladle and the other items are said to make up the ladle? Oh, take up the nature of Brahman, since their function depends on Brahman and since Brahman pervades them. Okay. Okay, so in other words, the ladle works, the spoon works, because that potency of Brahman, so it's dependent upon Brahman. The ladle is dependent upon Brahman to actually be able to do the function of a ladle. Right? So it's dependent upon Brahman. Brahman pervades it. But it itself is technically not, it's not Brahman. Does that make sense? Means, in other words, here we're talking about para-Brahman. Right? In other words, the person Brahman, who is the source of all Brahman. So the ladle is Brahman, but is not para-Brahman. But why the ladle works is because of para-Brahman. So even within Brahman, there is superior and inferior Brahman, and there's independent Brahman and dependent Brahman. Right? So Krishna is independent Brahman. Right? All other energy, all other Brahman is dependent. And within the dependent, then you have the internal, the external, and the jivas. Right? So in this way, you have four varieties of Brahman. So, because of their connection to the Supreme Brahman, therefore everything is able to function in its capacity. But it's all dependent. It's not independent. That's why then this point of you wouldn't take it to be identical. That would be the impersonal, because you can't tell the difference. Brahman doesn't mean you can't tell the difference. Brahman means you see the inherent spiritual quality. That's the same. But not that you can't tell the variety within Brahman. That just means spiritually not very developed. Okay. The fact that the Lord pervades everything does not mean he has become everything and has lost his personal existence. His omnipresence through his energies, and still he maintains his independent existence as the supreme enjoyer. The Lord confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Right? He pervades everything. Right? Because so this is important to see the perspective here. Right, because at one point Krishna will say, all beings are in me and are mine. Right? So we have to understand what the perspective is here. What is the difference? So, means he's pervaded everything. But that still doesn't mean it's him. He is a person that's still separate. Right? You've invested, say, $100 in a business. So that means your potency pervades that business. It's only there because of your potency. But you have $100,000. So it's not all of you. And you as a person aren't that business. Right? You know, sitting there is a bunch of, you know, whatever it is, stickers or hats or whatever it is you're doing. But you're not those stickers. Right? You are not those stickers. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that is, he expands into everything, but still, he's not in them. You know, you can say everything's in him, but he's still not in them. Or you can say he's in them, but they are not in him. So, he always is a person, he's separate from everything else. That's his potency that makes everything work. And they are in me and mine means his energy is contained within him, but he's still greater than his energy. Right? There's unlimited energy, but there is still the energetic. That's beyond. Right? So we know that is there, and we can study that, but it will not be something that will be, deeply understood in the conditioned state, and in the liberated state, one's not worried about it. Right? In other words, Krishna is beyond everything. So there's material, there's spiritual, then there's Krishna. Right? So he's the source of spiritual, therefore we'll say he's spiritual, but he's beyond spiritual, he's more than spiritual. So that's the point at which the brain runs out of synapses or space or stuff like that.
end of the road.
Yeah, yeah. It means the, how you say, the pita flop, stop. Flopping. Okay. Okay. Verse 24 describes the proper method of performing a sacrifice. The ultimate goal of all sacrifices is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our conditioned state of existence, the contact with matter is unavoidable. But when we spiritualize our activities by performing them as a service to the Lord, they become sacrifices. Oh, so this is continuing 4-5. Oh no, renunciation through wisdom. In other words, when one invokes the spiritual or transcendental or absolute in everything, then matter loses its mundaneness. And then only can one realize the perfect meaning of the phrase sarvam kalvidam brahma. Right? This is the real meaning of this term. Right? The Vaishnavas say that anything connected with the Lord in devotional service is transcendental. In other words, it is non-different from the Supreme Lord himself. Madhava. Just as iron in long and constant touch with fire loses the characteristics of iron and becomes fiery, so everything offered in sacrifice to the absolute or the transcendence becomes absolute or transcendental. Renunciation through wisdom. Right? So when you're dealing with material energy, when it's in connection with the Lord in actual, you know, fact means in your consciousness, then it loses its mundaneness. It has no mundane effect anymore. Just as iron has no effect of iron when it's in contact with fire. It acts as fire. It doesn't act as iron. Right? So in the same way is that everything becomes Brahman. But at the same time, as we have to always understand, is that the Supreme Brahman is still separate from all this. Right? So this is the importance of Achintabheda Veda Tattva. Is you have these overlapping contradictions that are not a contradiction when you're dealing with Krishna. You know, so it's just something to be aware of that there's not a problem in having two contradictory things have it resolved. It's a very standard thing in the Vedic culture to be able to deal with that. Because the scriptures are saying different things for different people at different times, places, and circumstances. Therefore, it appears contradictory, but they're not. So to be able to reconcile this is one of the Vedic principles. Because the Vedic principle is just, you could say, formalization of the culture and practices of those on the spontaneous platform. Does that make sense? You have to have some medium to work through. So it springs from those on the spontaneous platform, and it has its manifestation where it's more formal. And then all this is reflected here. Right? But the culture remains the same. Does that make sense? So that in connection with Krishna takes on that quality, because that's its original form. Right? Because we say the formal cause and the original cause, those are spiritual. Right? So those elements, then those are what's reflected. Right? And so you have Krishna as the original cause, and then the formal cause takes all the forms to manifest that quality. Right? So that's reflected here as the operational cause, the living entity, thinking that they are the original cause. And the material cause is reflecting the formal cause. Right? And so we think that our operation makes the material energy work. But actually it's the Lord and his internal yoga maya that makes it work. You understand? You see the reflection? So we don't see the original cause. Does it make sense? Okay. Verses 25 to 33. Sacrifices resulting in transcendental knowledge, right? So through nice karmia, doing the activities according to Shastra without a desire for results, seeing a connection to Krishna transforms anything into transcendental. Then we can see is that the sacrifice itself, that will give transcendental understanding. So through understanding, then you get, you know, in other words, how you say? What's that saying? Money generates money, or money, you know that, what's that saying? Basically. Huh?
Money makes money.
Yeah, money makes money. And it means, in other words, you have the one thing, and from that you make more. Like that? So in other words, you put in a little bit of knowledge, then by operating that, then you get more knowledge. With that more knowledge, then that's put back, reinvested, and then you get more. You understand? Same principle. So it's not different principles running all the different things. It's the same principle. It's just how you apply it. That's why business is not contradictory to the transcendental philosophy. Right? It's just a matter of understanding. It's just how you apply it. In the previous section, Krishna explains how to transform our daily work into yajna. In verse 25 to 33, he describes different sacrifices resulting in transcendental knowledge and liberation. They are recommended in the Vedas to suit different types of workers. All these sacrifices help one to become purified of material existence and advance one towards the eternal atmosphere. Without sacrifices, one cannot be happy in this life. What to speak of the next? The sacrifices performed in knowledge are better than mere sacrifices of material possessions. The purpose of all sacrifices is to know one's relationship with the Supreme Lord and to engage in loving transcendental service to Him. Srila Prabhupada summarizes this section as follows. The purport of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna consciousness, right? So you have knowledge, then you gain freedom from material miseries and engage in transcendental loving service, right? So that means knowledge is the proper situation on the material platform, or let's say within the material existence, right? In other words, you're performing your activities with proper knowledge, right? So with that proper understanding, what we've been before. In other words, the activity has been converted into sacrifice because of its connection with the Supreme. Right? So that means that we have proper knowledge. From that proper knowledge, you are liberated from material existence. And because you have proper knowledge of how it comes from Krishna as a person and how He pervades everything and makes everything work, then we move towards serving Krishna as the person. Right? So we develop transcendental devotional service. Make sense? Right? So that's it. So we can see is that developing of the knowledge is not the top. That's just the important half of the sacrifice. Right? So in other words, like knowledge is considered feminine, right? Saraswati is feminine, you know, on that aspect. So this is the better half. Right? Like that. In other words, the simple offering of material elements, that's secondary to the proper knowledge and consciousness in which it's offered. Right? So in other words, this is the more important half. But that's gotten at by the one. Right? In other words, we have some understanding, you deal properly with the material energy in the proper way, in the sacrifice, that generates then proper understanding. That can be then applied again. And one keeps applying that until one has complete knowledge. That complete knowledge will give freedom from material existence. Right? Then one can very enthusiastically take up, you know, devotional, pure devotional service on the Uttama platform. Right? That's very easy. Right? Because if one's not liberated, one will be functioning on the Madhyam or Neophyte platform. Does that make sense? So in other words, we're trying to put into perspective that this knowledge is very important, but it's very important in that it will free one from the material existence and allow one to develop pure love for Krishna. Yeah? Nonetheless, there's a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice. And one should know this mystery, right? In other words, it doesn't seem to, it seems that there's all these subtle elements and all that. So it's mysterious. But Guru Prabhupada is saying, one should know this mystery. Right? This should be known. Because then, you know, later Guru will say, this is the art of all work. Right? That you know how to do all this in connection with Him. So they're saying, and the previously it's been pointed out here, is that in your daily work, we're not talking about some special work, we're talking about your daily work. Special work, of course, is focusing on that it will have more of the spiritual content. Right? Your daily activities may not have as much spiritual, direct spiritual activity as, let's say, Govardhan Puja, or Prabhupada's disappearance day. Right? Because that's focused just on direct activities. That's what makes it a festival. Right? Sava means material miseries. Ut means to rise above. Right? So how do you rise above material miseries? Right? Don't get involved. Therefore, fasting and all these direct activities. So it's an opportunity to be freed from just the regular day-to-day humdrum. Right? At the same time, as Krishna is giving here in these two chapters, how you can take your daily ordinary life and make that into sacrifice. This is what's being offered. So this is not theory. It sounds like a lot, but why? Because it's so sophisticated. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Okay, let's say I have a hammer, and I have a screwdriver, and I have a saw. Okay? So what's going on here? What's this group?
Carpentry.
Okay. I have a pot, I have a spoon, I have a grater.
Cooking.
Okay. I have I have some lug nuts, I have a hug cap, and I have a windshield wiper. Okay. So now they're all very different. So if I only talk in the one, it'll have some sophistication. Some skill is there. And no one's going to complain, oh, this knowledge of that is theoretical. Right? No one should complain about that, especially because, you know, here to operate your, you know, mobile phone, you have to get a bachelor's degree these days. You know? So no one should complain about, you know, theory doesn't have any practice, because otherwise, what is IT? Right? Anybody seen a bit? You know, on a horse maybe, but on a computer, no. So therefore, it's all this, a lot of theory is going on here, right? So now you're going to take something that can hold together car mechanics and cooking and music and, you know, anything else, you name it, and it can hold it all together no matter who you are, what situation, you can turn that into transcendental sacrifice. You're talking about something extremely sophisticated, but at the same time, something very primeval. So that means very simple. Right? So you have, we're not used to this. Sophistication and simplicity being the same thing. You know what I'm saying? That's why we'll look at what we're talking today, say this is very complicated. No, this is very simple. But it's very sophisticated. So the part that is straining the brain is the sophistication. That is so simple, that's also a strain on the brain. Because that means I could apply it. You know? I can't just say, oh, it's theory, it can't be applied. So this mystery, this needs to be known. Otherwise, why is Krishna wasting? They're on a battlefield. They want to be practical. You know, get out your sword. Like that. Does that make sense? But this is very practical. Yes.
Would that sacrifice have a connection to the attitude of gratitude?
Attitude of gratitude. Gratitude of what?
Towards Supreme Lord, others.
I mean, gratitude would be one element, but the working principle is that surrender, right? In the 26 qualities of the devotees, that surrender to the Supreme Lord, that dependency on the Lord, that's the actual you would say, your Swarup Lakshana, the one that's always there. Others may come up because you're appreciating different things. So depending upon the situation and one's own nature, then these different qualities will be there. So that's why there's 26 qualities. But it's one is always fixed and the other 25, maybe they are not depending upon the individual or the situation. So gratitude may be one aspect of approaching it. Yes.
I meant to say that surrender might be motivated by fear or attachment also.
But it can also be why gratitude. It could be love, it could be friendship, it could be servitorship, it could be knowledge. Yeah, they're all connected. Because the point is one can only have gratitude if he's intelligent. Only intelligent people have gratitude. Someone who doesn't have any gratitude means he's not intelligent. Right? He may be good in skills, but he's emotionally or socially unintelligent. You know what I'm saying? So gratitude is a one of five qualities of the intelligence. That's mentioned, I think, also in Second Canto. Like that. There's a list of the five qualities of intelligence. So memory is one of them, gratitude's one of them. Like that. The other three, I don't remember. It's one of those quotes that I've seen and can't find, so it's one of those.
Raj, can you please explain what it means that this art of transforming our activities into sacrifice, what does it mean that is sophisticated?
Sophisticated means it has to have so much, means it has to be able to accommodate a huge amount of variety because everybody's life is quite variegated, right? So that's why it has to be very sophisticated. So it means, in other words, the principle is very simple, so it's universal, it applies to everything, but it has to be sophisticated enough that it can actually be practically applied to everything. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise you may have, okay, here's the theory. You know, samandabhide prayojana. Okay? So, and that applies to everything, but you have to be able to apply it. That's the sophistication. Right, so it's that combination of both, having the simplicity to be able to always bring it back to them, at the same time being able to take it and apply it to anything. Right? In other words, everything can be connected to it. That's the simplicity. That you're connecting it to that, that's the sophistication.
Okay.
Yes. Is that okay? Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without much such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Right. So that means this. We have to be able to distinguish here also what we're meaning by knowledge. Because there's knowledge of the skill, but that's just part of performing the ritual. Then there's the knowledge that affects the consciousness. Because that's what's going to be working, it's going to change the character. Right? So that's the whole thing. The person who fixes your car and then cheats you and charges you a lot, and the person who fixes your car and doesn't cheat you, the difference is in the consciousness. The technique of fixing the car is exactly the same. So they both have the same knowledge. But one has knowledge of something higher. Right? In other words, here they have of social values, of, you know, other things like that. But here he's saying it's still material. It'll give you a better material situation. Right? The other guy makes some quick money, but with time no one goes to his shop. The one, he doesn't make as much money quickly, but with time everybody knows him and trusts him, so he gets really nicely situated. So materially he'll do fine, because the skill is there, consciousness is higher, like this. But still, until one has this knowledge that Gita is giving, it doesn't become actually sacrifice. You know, meaning it will, the sacrifice gives you spiritual result. It'll be sacrifice in that you're using some higher principles, but it'll still give you just material. Right, so you may get lower material or higher material, you know, impious or pious. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, one of the prophets, I think Paul, in the Bible, he mentions a work with no faith has no value.
Okay.
Was he trying to attempt to the lower levels of
of sacrifice?
Work without faith has no... Well, here faith would mean, I would expect he's saying faith in God.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're talking about a transcendental position, though at the same time it's because they don't understand transcendence. You know what I'm saying? So they're having faith in the Supreme, but they don't actually can't define the Supreme. Right? It's a bit contradictory. So on one element, you know, that he's the Supreme, omnipotent, he's the source of everything, omnipresent, knows all, sees all, like that. That side of it they have okay, but then when they get down to practical application, then that involves the individual's karma, and that's where that whole philosophy falls apart. So then what they are left with, instead of this transcendental concept, they're left with morality. You know, so that's the difficulty, is they're trying to marry transcendence and morality, and trying to say that they're on the same level when they're not. One is supportive of the other. Therefore, sometimes they're moral at the expense of transcendence. You know what I'm saying? The worst sinner is there. He goes and he confesses. And he's clean. Right? But at the same time, as there's other situations, it doesn't matter what you say, you're going to get punished. You know what I'm saying? So there's not a consistency there. In other words, one is working on morality, the other's working on faith. So based on faith, you confess and you see it's bad, but that confession is not just saying, well, I did this. The confession is, did this, and therefore it's not pleasing to God or to, you know, you understand? So in other words, the faith has not been properly. While the others are looking at it simply on the mundane platform, this is not just. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then why is it the one man is being put in jail or something and the other man is not? Because they're actually two different realms. But this inconsistency is not seen. Right? So they're thinking it's one, but actually it's two different things. So the morality should be in support of the faith. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea of here. This mystery means you can define the difference, at the same time see how they all work together. There's a non-difference, but there's a difference. That's the mystical element. So that's Krishna, that's God. He can do that. Okay. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. In other words, we've seen is that all these different levels of faith and sacrifice, there are levels. That's why the Shastra is defining them. But you have to know that just because it's in the Shastra, that's fine. But you have to know where it is in relationship to other levels. Right? Then it will be progressive. And then ultimately you have to know it in connection with the Supreme Lord. That's the ultimate. So you can say real knowledge, in other words, all knowledge is there, but real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness. So if it doesn't culminate in Krishna consciousness, it's not real knowledge, it's knowledge. But real means it's connected to the Lord because He is the source of knowledge. So if you don't connect it to the Lord, it's not actually real knowledge. It's knowledge, how to deal, manipulate material energy. And you'll get some result. Therefore, it appears to be real, but it's not. Because all you've done is manipulate an illusion. Right? Because you're not actually seeing it's Krishna's energy, and it's to be used in his service according to his direction. So you don't see a connection to Krishna. You think, by my operating it, I've got the result. But why, if that's true, why is there a material cause? I meant the material energy itself transformed. You didn't do it. Right? You put the potatoes in the water, the water is on the fire. You know, water's in a pot, of course. The pot's on the fire, and the fire's on. Right? And so, therefore, you leave it there long enough, then it becomes soft. So you can say, I made the potatoes soft, but did you actually? No, the water and the fire and the potatoes transformed. So where was that potency of transformation? It's not coming from you. Are you the fire? Right? No. No. So that's the point, is that there's something else they're working that's outside of us, that we can operate, but we don't control. If you controlled it, Why is it that it doesn't matter, you know, what you do, it still takes 20 minutes to boil your potatoes? Right. Yes?
Would that mean that sacrifice is the rule for operating?
Is the rule? Yeah. No, there's the ritual of the sacrifice. But actually, the sacrifice means it's being done without desiring the result. There's a higher purpose. So, at least while you're operating, one should be in that mentality. Right? It means, just like you're boiling the potato. If you're attached to the potato, it's your potato, and you want the results right now. Well, the potatoes get boiled. You keep taking them out and trying to take a bite, and, you know, stuff like that. No, so you have to be detached while you're boiling the potatoes. Right? But once the potatoes are boiled, then you might see attachment comes in. Therefore, that's a lower sacrifice than if you had done that when you got that for someone else. Still, that's lower than if you did it for Krishna. Technique is the same. Nishkarma is the same. Right? But therefore, it's just a matter of... So for us, Nishkarma means Krishna consciousness. But otherwise, everyone's successful in this world because of Nishkarma, that's all. But we don't see it as Nishkarma because it is a fruit. They want the result. But in performing the activity, it has to be done with the proper knowledge and proper everything. Otherwise, proper technique.
So sacrifice would be synonymous to detachment?
It's not so much detachment, because detachment is a state of existence. But the point is when you take that position of that state of existence and apply it for someone else's benefit, you know, in a working environment that generates a result. In other words, sacrifice only happens when you combine samandabhide and prayojana. See, this is what it means. This is why on both these occasions I focused on the quality, because the tendency is the modern environment separates the quality and it stands on its own. It's good on its own. Like the other day we had compassion, you know, or then, you know, brought up here is, you know, detachment, or what was the one before? Gratefulness. Those are states of existence. But that existence must be applied. And so it's in the action of applying that, then it becomes sacrifice. Because if it's not applied, it just exists. So it's doing nothing. It's intransitive. So there'll be no data. There'll be no result. Right? Krishna is swimming. Nothing's accomplished. Right? Krishna swims to the other side of the Jamuna. Then something's accomplished. Right? So that's the subtleties that are there. The difficulty is modern man, unable to see this, then thinks the quality on his own stands. But they will always apply it into a living situation, but they can't actually differentiate there. So they think simply if the quality is there and that's what's being applied, that's what's good. You know, so they'll take Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but they won't be connected. One time they're talking Sambandha, one time Abhideya, one time Prayojana. But they don't have something where they're all together. So we have, they're all together, and we can discuss them separately, but we're discussing them in relationship to the other two. Right? Well, generally when they'll discuss one, they forget about the other two. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not real knowledge, because it's not consistent. It's not completely brought together. And that can only happen with Krishna. Right? Because he is the situation. You know, in other words, he is the rules, he is the implements, he is the mantras, he is, you know, the persons involved, the priest, the yajaman, you know, the benefactor of like that. He is the goals that you got. He is the application. Right? So he's all three.
He's the same. United all
them. Yes, all those are there because they're non-different from him. So you can't separate them. Like that. Is that okay? So that's the idea, is that one always has to be very careful, because otherwise they get separated. Chaitanya Tai. Okay. Okay. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter into the spiritual platform. Right. So, yeah. Depending upon differences in okay. So this means without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activity. So it's not sacrifice if there's no knowledge. So here the working principle for you asking is compassion is actually knowledge. Right? And compassion will be, you know, where it will be applied, you know, who will get benefit from it. But without knowledge, it doesn't become sacrifice. So that's the whole point, is the last chapter in this chapter showing that about the combination of activity and knowledge. Because Arjuna is saying, I'm doing activity, there's no knowledge. And as soon as I get knowledge in the second chapter, I should go to the forest and do no activity. So Krishna's trying to show how the two come together. Right? So he's focused on one, but in relationship to knowledge. Now knowledge in relationship to activities. Right? Does that make sense? So the knowledge makes it sacrifice. Because with knowledge, then you know that, you know, there's some higher purpose. Otherwise, it's just a mundane activity. Then doing it becomes sacrifice, still material, but properly situated. Then if it's done with transcendental knowledge, then it's transcendental sacrifice. So that's why the pious activity is a proper situation. So, but that's the only good thing about piety, is that it's the good situation, you know, to perform sacrifice. Because you're supposed to have the knowledge and the activity. But nowadays, if you're just pious, meaning the activity with no knowledge, that's considered good enough. Like that. But the two have to go together. Otherwise, it's not real sacrifice, it's not real piety. Depending upon differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruit of activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. So here we're pointing out that knowledge is better than simply activities. Right? But the point is by performing activities, you get knowledge. And one in knowledge performs correct activities. So you can't separate. It's just a matter of which way you're looking at it. You know, what's the important perspective? It doesn't... You know. Verses 34 to 42. A summary of transcendental knowledge. The previous section described different sacrifices resulting in transcendental knowledge. In verse 34, Krishna gives the direct way of attaining such knowledge. The Lord advises that one must approach a self-realized soul, serve him submissively, and ask questions. Right? Okay, so this is going to, so as we see, as we're seeing in there is that the sacrifice is for different people. Like it mentions, the brahmachari, he sacrifices, this engagement of the senses into renunciation. So in other words, he basically is either not engaging the senses or what he's engaged them in, the result is not his. Right? Well, the household is engaging the senses in the fire of the sense objects. Right? So that means the medium is different. I mean, of course, senses is the common platform. But there it's not renunciation in the way of that you're performing an activity that you're not involved in the result. Or the result is directly for someone else. Here you have the opportunity that the sense is engaged in the sense object, then the result that you gain, that will be connected. Does that make sense? So it makes a difference between sannyas and tyag. Right? So in other words, the brahmachari is engaged in the element of sannyas. So brahmachari is vanaprastha sannyas, that's supposed to be the platform. They're performing activities that are for the Lord's benefit. Right? Grihastha, he's performing activities that ultimately are for the Lord's benefit. It's just a matter of if he's going to start from engaging them from the platform of renunciation or from the platform of sannyas. So by the process, you practice, so you're going to start with renunciation. Then with practice and application, it'll come to the platform of sannyas. Right? But the medium doesn't change. Right. So this is the point, is that these both end up as sacrifice. Because it's connected to the Lord, yes.
When Prabhupada mentioned brahmachari grihastha, he was talking about the sannyas principle in the grihastha ashram.
Not necessarily. The brahmachari grihastha, then it's that he's following the Shastra and doing everything for the higher purpose. Then that's the same. In other words, example Manu gives is then he explains when one can conceive a child. Because there's certain days that just aren't used, certain titis aren't used. All these different things. So if one follows that, and one deals with the wife properly, right? Then that conception of a child is equal to the brahmachari who's, you know, has nothing to do with ladies. Because you're dealing with the ladies according to the scripture, right? For the pleasure of the Lord. So it's non-different, right? But at the same time, is because of the nature of the field, it carries the particular, you know, benefits and, how do you say, what would be a poetic way of saying? Not hindrances, huh? Risks are there. These are all, you know, important, but there's must be some poetic way of saying the niceness of both the benefits and also then the difficulties that come up. But not drawbacks.
Room for improvement.
Challenges, yes, that would be a good thing. Does that make sense? Okay, so now this transcendental knowledge is going to work. Now we bring it back again. It's going to work because once approach the spiritual master, this knowledge is not going to come from anywhere. You're not going to make it up. You're not just going to approach the scriptures on your own. You're going to get it from the spiritual master. Right? He's getting it from the scriptures. Because the spiritual master has seen the truth, he can give a clear understanding that all living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. Once one realizes this, he will not be deluded again, verse 35. Right? So you've seen the truth. What does the truth mean?
Krishna.
Yeah, Krishna. But in what form?
The Siddhanta.
So that Siddhanta, then there are three forms of Krishna. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabyate. Right? So in other words, if someone understands this, how everything is connected to Krishna, even not he's not seeing Krishna in Vrindavan and, you know, running through the fields and all that, then he has seen the truth. Right? You understand? Some like to take it that it's only if you personally are there with Krishna and this and that, and you know, because the point is everyone, right now, every living entity is with Krishna. Krishna's in their heart. So, you know, you can't get any closer than that. You know? You know what I'm saying? You're saying, yes, but Krishna's in my heart. He's in everybody's heart. You know, he's right there. Everything you do, you're only dealing with Krishna. There's nothing that you're not dealing with Krishna. But because you don't see it, you're an illusion. Those who see it, that's the spiritual master. Right? So he has seen the truth. But you have to know what truth means. So the highest platform, yes, is Bhagavan. So that means that there's no problem in establishing, you know, a bona fide spiritual master. Does that make sense? Very important. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments that verse 34 speaks about specific kind of transcendental knowledge. After thus teaching knowledge of Atma and the method of realizing this knowledge with its components, verses 25 to 33, the Lord now teaches the knowledge of worshipping the Lord's Swarup. To obtain this knowledge, a person must take association of devotees. That he teaches in this verse. Right? So now here's the point, is that you've seen all this, the transcendental element, but now you have to bring it to the point of Krishna as a person. Because ultimately that's going to be the drive. Otherwise, if it's just all Brahman, then if there's no goal beyond that, where is one going to stop? At Brahman. That's all. So the point is unless Krishna is a person and serving him in devotion is your goal, then these other stages, one will just stop there. Okay, so that only happens in the association of devotees. It won't happen on our own. That's why it's so important to associate with devotees. We don't see anybody in the Gaudiya history, you think about it, any great personalities. They were always on their own and never associated with anybody. Think about it. There's no examples. Yes?
What about Bhamsi Das Babaji?
Bhamsi Das Babaji. People didn't go see him?
He chased them away.
But chased who away? He chased the devotees away? No. He didn't chase the devotees away. But I never heard him specifically chasing away. But it's just like, you know, they're not going to understand the conversation anyway. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the point was is they'll make offense, not that he had any problem in associating. Like that, so. Yeah. So when he'd go visit, then he would have no problem. Or he had one disciple who would go and, I think, take things or prasad or, you know, whatever. He'd go and see that everything was okay. Because he said anybody else will make offense. So he was the only one that could go. Point is it's not that they go away and you never hear about them. They go off in the forest and that's it. No, they're always associating with devotees because that's the secret, association of devotees. That's what makes the process work. When that's there, it's dynamic. When it's not there, it's not dynamic. So what's the problem? Someone's out in the middle of nowhere, you know, living on his own, just in his family, but he's, you know, he has his deities, they have the nice program in the morning and evening and all this and that. Or he's just alone and he's over there. What's the problem?
No one to see if he goes off the road.
Yeah, that's all. It's the association's the problem. Otherwise, the program is fine. So the weakness is association. So someone only shows up at the temple once a year at Janmashtami. Better they show up than at least once a year they get association and everything like that. But the weakness is the lack of association. Right? Because you could say, well, no, but they're not doing service. They are doing service. They're worshiping their deities, they're chanting, they're doing kirtan, you know, like that, making the family Krishna conscious. So they are serving. Right? But the weakness is they're not serving in the association of devotees. That make sense? Yes.
What about taking association of the spiritual master through his instructions?
One takes the instruction of the spiritual master through association. Yes. One takes the association of the spiritual master through the instructions. But it doesn't mean that in implying those instructions, you're not associating with other devotees. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? In his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master is the first item of devotional service. Adau Guru Parashraya. So, in other words, that's the most important. One takes shelter of the spiritual master, one takes initiation, follows the instructions. It's of taking up devotional stuff. I think what chapter are you on? You've got the sixth chapter. Okay, so this is coming up now. Have you finished it or you're just starting it? Okay, so that's the whole point, is that there's 20 items necessary to begin devotional service to be situated nicely. Right, 10 to begin, 10 to be situated. But of those, approaching the spiritual master, hearing instruction, taking, this is the most important. Right? Then having done that, what are the instructions on? We'll be on the 44 items. Right? Like that. And so, yes.
A question to the previous one. Anybody in the devotee society do something that sometimes is very torn down, the devotee society told some kind of regulations like this, not come to the temple during 3 years. Devotees must speak with that kind of person during 5 years. It's happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. So you just go to another temple that believes more in the devotional process, that's all. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have to be able to distinguish between management and actually the devotional process. So managerially, they may have to use those kind of rules because the nature of the people is such. You know, but at the same time, as there is the devotional element. So if you can increase the devotional element, these rules become less important. But at the same time, as if people are unwilling to increase that devotional element, then you may have to use these to at least keep them focused and following some. So the point to be learned is what to be careful of. So one should be careful of that, and then one continues his service wherever he can. Because the point is, Krishna is always available, so it's that you find association somewhere else. You know, there's always Uruguay. No one's been there. But yes.
Maharaj, how much effect does electronic association have?
Electronic association. Depends on the quality. Right? Let us say you are going to hand write a letter. Right? And you scribble it out. Then you just, as soon as you finish scribbling it, you just fold it up and stick it in an envelope, seal it, and send it. Right? That's how you do it? No. What would you do?
Revise it.
Go back, read it, revise it. You know, if there's something you're not sure, let it sit. You know, because it's going to take weeks to get there, so, and you know, another day is not a big deal. So, who does that on the electronics? No. So if they did that, it would improve the quality of it. But no, it's just a matter you get there and how fast you can type. That's how quickly you did. And then, you push the send button and that's all. So basically speaking, you can't say there's a lot of association, you know. Maybe a podcast because you hear the voice, you can hear the mood and everything like that, you know. But other than that, then it may be difficult. You know, if somebody's done some research on that, has uploaded that, but an actual, you know, chit-chat may not be so much unless it's actually just a chat, you know, because then generally people keep it very short, and you know, they're not big philosophical, you know what I'm saying? So it's highly restricted on how well it can help you and stuff. In Renunciation Through Wisdom, Srila Prabhupada warns about some of the challenges a sadhaka can face after the initiation. Nice to hear. Prabhupada used the word challenge, right? Mm-hmm. One should not raise too many doubts and questions. This process, which strictly follows the Vedas, will bring us to a realization of the inconceivable truth. Right? So, very important things he's put in here. Is that, in other words, too many doubts and questions. In other words, it should be to the point. You can't doubt. In other words, if you're doubting the process and this and that, those aren't so important. How to use the process. Because if you doubt the process, why did you take initiation? Right? In other words, one has to not doubt the process to take initiation. Right? Then it's a matter of a doubt, how do I apply it in my life? Right? Like Arjuna doesn't say, you know, well, you know, all this stuff you're saying here about the soul and all that, you know, I mean, what's the relevance of this? Why do we need to know? He doesn't say like that. He says it appears contradictory because you've given knowledge. You're saying, I'm doing activity, and you're saying you're a fool because you don't have knowledge. So now I'm using this knowledge and I'm going to give up that work. But then you say, no, I have to do the work. So that seems to be a contradiction because jnanakanda and karmakanda have never been seen in the same place at the same time. Right? So that's unheard of. So now Krishna's talking about performing activity, karma, in knowledge, jnana. So it seems contradictory. So his question is on that. Right? So otherwise, too many doubts and questions. You know, like, you know, that one question of Prabhupada. How many windows in the Empire State Building? You know. So, I mean, that's useless. What will it do? Even if you knew. Okay, so what now? You know, and then we can ask, what kind of window? How thick's the glass? You know, where does it end? You know, there's no... Okay. So now he's saying this process, and Prabhupada says here, what strictly follows the Vedas. Some people try to say, oh, Prabhupada bent the rules. He didn't follow the Vedas. He made it up. No, Prabhupada is very clear that he's always following the Vedas. He doesn't make up anything. Because the point is if Prabhupada made it up, we can make it up. There is a slight difference between a Nitya Siddha and a Baddha Jeev, of course. But that's finessed. But here is that we're bringing the thing is that it strictly follows the Vedas. That will let us realize the inconceivable truth. You can't understand, you can only understand Krishna by approaching him through the spiritual master and following the Vedic process. Right? That's what he says. You know, he's God. He can say whatever he wants. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, you're out in the street. You know, it's that kid's ball. He makes the rules. You want to play ball with him? He makes the rules. You don't, he'll take his ball and go home. Right? You're going to say?
I've heard
in that line you're saying that more like you're saying, wouldn't Prabhupada's changing be a teaching that we should change?
That's the point is, but Prabhupada didn't change. That's the thing. Prabhupada did not change. That's why he said strictly following the Vedas. The problem is the devotees are not knowledgeable enough in the Vedas to understand how he didn't change it. Because who are the ones that are professing change? The ones that are pro-Vedic or the ones that are liberal? Liberal. You understand? So the point is the liberals don't actually know the culture, otherwise they wouldn't be in that position. You know what I'm saying? You know, let us say you go to an insane asylum and they have a very dangerous criminal there. Right? You know, and his method is he's very nice to everybody, and as soon as he gets your confidence, then he'll do something bad. Okay? Now, the person who runs the insane asylum knows the criminal and knows how to deal. And so he'll deal nicely, so you deal nicely. It's nice, it's culture. But at the same time, you don't put yourself in a situation that he can take advantage of. Now, let's say, you know, some other person comes and visits and sees him. He deals very nice, and he's been there a long time and this and that, and he looks like he's changed and so many things, and he's saying, no, but we should be very, you know, we should be kind, we should be, you know, liberal, we should give him a chance. And the guy, you know, that runs the insane asylum, I said, no, he's very dangerous. You can't do like that. There's very strict rules. No, but we have to go beyond. He's a person. We have to consider, you know, we're all, you know, the human race, you know, all these, whatever it is that they come up with. So, why are they saying that? Because they don't know the situation. So, but the point is why are they saying that, right? The guy that works down at the docks and all that and just moves bales of hay all day, is he worried about the guy? No. It's the ones that are educated and have free, you know, time to waste. Right? They're the ones that are worried. They don't know. So, if they're worried about that, then learn. Go into it. In other words, this kind of dealing is important to you. Then learn the field. Then you can decide, okay, well, they're running this, but there is ways that you could be a little bit more open and give them a little bit more opportunities. And then you could work on it. While this other person is applying very strictly and is not giving much opportunity. But then you can see within it. You can discriminate within the field. But they're saying, no, we don't have to follow the Vedas. Rather than within the Vedas, there is more liberal understanding. That's Vaishnavism, right? And then you have the smartest, which is not liberal. You understand? So Vaishnavas are the actual liberal, and these others, they're not liberal at all. You understand? Yeah. So that's the idea. One has to be very, very careful. Because the point is they're saying, change, what did Prabhupada change? That would be the first thing. What did he change? That's the thing. What did he change? Otherwise, it was so obvious. Everyone, oh, yeah, you know. Yeah.
He changed the details of application.
The deals.
Details.
Detail. But what detail? What did he change?
Like introduced Brahmachari Ashram.
Brahmachari in the ashram. You probably got more Brahmacharinis in ashrams, in Hindu ashrams, than we do in our temples.
From Gaudiya tradition.
Gaudiya tradition? Or Gaudiya Math? No, Gaudiya means you go to Radharaman. Go to Radharaman temple. You know, you walk in that gate, and there's all those houses there. And then you get to the temple. Who lives in those houses? Grihastas. So do they have any unmarried girls? So? You're not going to get much more Gaudiya tradition than them. Right? In fact, they're claiming they are the tradition and we're not. You know what I'm saying? So what changed?
Gaudiya
Math, but we're not, so that's the point. He changed from a mat to a temple. Temple has grihastas, mats don't. So it's under a line to use either. But he did have. He had St. Louis at one time was and Hyderabad. They were both mutts. There were no ladies. No ladies lived in the temple. Like now I don't think they are. But they were, you know, for, I think when Prabhupada was here, they were like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's not changed. It's based on the tradition. It's just which option is better. So Gaudiya Math chosen one. It works very nicely. You just manage the brahmacharis and all that. It's take Chaupati. What's Chaupati? It's a mutt. Right? And it works very nicely. But it works very intimately with the community. Right? Well, general tendency is even the temples don't work intimately with the community. So here is this is it's a very powerful combination. You know what I'm saying? So, but you have to know what you're doing. Anything else?
The number of rounds.
Number of rounds. He changed. But but have you never heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave that number? 16 rounds if you're preaching. So Prabhupada arranged everybody's preaching. In other words, 64 was for when you sit in the mat. So you have your service, you do your pujari work, or you cook, or you take care of the cows, you have more time. So you better chant 64 rounds. Right? But those who are preaching, then better they're doing more preaching. Because what do you keep speaking when you preach? Yeah, about Krishna. So therefore, you know, you do 48 rounds worth of preaching, you know, and you do 16 rounds on your beads. So that's not new. Anything else? This is my point, is that there is nothing. It's just, this is all talk by those who are uninformed. See, this is the thing. They'll take something that they don't know about and then use it, and then what will be their change? There'll be changes for how to apply it that it really dynamically strengthens the movement, or it's something political or economic. That's all. In other words, these changes they talk about never get passed on a good day, pranamoy. And I'm talking a good day. And there's a good chance that the person who's raising the hand and putting out the idea, it's coming from anamoy. But they're professing that it's something, you know, elevated and spiritual because it's pranamoy. Because in the Western, the non-Vedic tradition, pranamoy is considered spiritual. Because it's not for you. You're sacrificing your own for, you know, someone else. That's spiritual. Right? Because I, as a Malechan Yag, would never do that. So to do that, that's spiritual. You know, like the person who ran back into their house to get their cat, you know, when there was a fire. That's spiritual, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Is that right here? So that's the thing. So we have to be careful about these points. Because Prabhupada's saying right here, this process which strictly follows the Vedas. It strictly follows the Vedas. The point is the Vedas are very broad. They're saying, oh, Vedas are very narrow. That's why they can't see these things. Their idea is that, oh, if you don't, you just go to Mangalarti, this, that, and that's the way it is. But the point is, like, we have Guru Puja. Where does Guru Puja come from? Right? Where does it come from? It's part of the Pancharatrik process. You want to worship the deity, you go into the deity room, you do your achman, you worship the Guru. Then only you can go on the altar and worship the deity. Right? That's the Pancharatrik process. We're initiated into the Pancharatrik process. Right? And we can see Guru Parashraya is such an important element. How many devotees go in the deity room and worship the deity? Not so many. So that means, since it's such an important element, therefore, they perform that activity. But it's no different than the pujari who sits down and offers the 16 items or, you know, offers flowers or whatever it is. It's the same principle. Right? And since kirtan is our main thing, the Bhagavat, therefore, it's manifest through the Bhagavat ritual as opposed to simply a purely Pancharatrik. Though the Pancharatrik is involved in that, you have the Artik. Right? So it's directly explainable. But unless one knows Pancharatra, how will one know that? You know? And most people haven't even picked up a Pancharatra Pradeep, let alone read it. Yeah, someone you had? No, okay. Is that okay? So another one, yes. No, but it was a matter of, otherwise they said they would leave. It wasn't that Prabhupada, you know, like this. It's just they didn't come to the temple for 10 days and just said, we'll leave. So then Prabhupada took it into it. What does the Gayatri Mantra do? The Brahma Gayatri. See, the Pancharatrik Gayatri is the ladies can get, but not the Brahma Gayatri. So they were jumping up and down about that one. So the Brahma Gayatri is for elevating one to the Brahman platform and removing the Purusha Bhav, that I am the controller and joy. So the very masculine elements. So Bhaktisiddhanta and others didn't use the mantra before because it generates that masculinity. It deals with masculinity, remove it. But Prabhupada worked on the principle of basically, you know, just being blunt. These aren't women. They're not feminine. Right? Like that. So therefore, then they could take advantage of it. But, like the Vedic tradition, do they chant it with swaras? Do they chant it with the swaras? No. So then that's also theirs. You can, all these samskars and mantras are used for women without the swaras. Does that make sense? So that then is keeping within the tradition. So we can see is what elements Prabhupada's using. But what he's using is still based on the scriptures. But when devotees use it, it's not. It's just based on expediency according to economics or politics. That's all. It's not actual spiritual. Because if it was spiritual, then they would see the connection. And they wouldn't see it as a change. It's just a practical application. Right? You're on the street preaching. And then you see an opportunity to go into a shop. Is that changing? No, the form seems to be different, but the principle is the same. If someone's preaching in a prison, you know what I'm saying? Or goes to a yoga studio. No, but they're saying, no, you have to change the form. No, we don't do this kind of preaching, we only do that kind of preaching. No, we do preaching. So now what form it takes, that's a detail. That's not change. That's intelligence, how to apply the principle. But if the principle's not applied, you go there and you go to the yoga studio and still after 3 weeks, they're not chanting Hare Krishna, know nothing about the Supreme Absolute Truth. That isn't preaching. You know what I'm saying? Because you have no obligation. It's not like your grandmother or something. So you just go and be nice and everything and give her a shot. It's different. You're obligated there. She is your grandmother, right? You know, what's your relation with those yoga people? You know, so why do I have to go chit-chat with the yoga people? Does that make sense? Yeah, that answers it. There's still something there. I was just processing or... Okay, one should not raise too many doubts and questions. This process, which strictly follows the Vedas, will bring us to a realization of the inconceivable truth. Once we are on this path, many realizations dawn on us, and it is imperative that we pursue them in order to progress further. In other words, realizations that come, they should be cultivated. We should think about them and always try to apply them. If we don't, then what are you going to work with? That's that knowledge that comes from the service. Right? So then that should be applied back into the service, then more knowledge comes. The faint illumination of knowledge that appears at first is certain to lead to full enlightenment. But we have to be patient, right? In the beginning in the East, there's just a little bit of light. But if we are patient, then the sun will come up. We must carefully avoid letting pride enter our hearts because of some initial perceptions of the inconceivable absolute. Right? There's something there. Right? Inconceivable absolute. One is inconceivable, but these understandings of Krishna's position and all these and that. Rather, we must eagerly approach the guru or the pure devotee and ask how to proceed. We must reject the narrow and bigoted idea that there's nothing more to know. Right? So here's also, as the movement expands, it develops, there's more to know, more ways to apply, but there's no change. Right? Probably what was his comment about, you know, what is it, put your head down, put your feet up, do something new? There's always this criticism of the Westerners. They always had to change something. Right? Like, now, what are some of the latest books BBT is producing and other devotees are producing? What's the size of the books? Big coffee table books. What was Prabhupada's original Krishna book like? Many of you may have never seen it. They were big. They were this big. They were coffee table size. Prabhupada wanted them to be that size because then big ones, one, they're nice and he wanted hundreds of pictures. Devotees couldn't make all the pictures he wanted. I think he wanted 200 pictures or something. And so, and something that big may not go on the shelf and it has pictures, it'll sit on the table, on the coffee table. Right? Then people will pick it up, look at the pictures, may read a little bit. You know, like that. But what were the devotees kept pushing? Make it small. It was three big volumes. Each one is supposed to have hundreds of pictures. That's one Krishna book in three volumes. That's this big and like this with 600 pictures. Right? Now it's in one volume, you know, with some pictures. You understand? So this is the kind of thing of Prabhupada saying, this is change. But in the end, they come back to it anyway, 30 years later. You understand? So it's because Prabhupada knows, you have this, what's there, the ideas to get them. They're saying, no, but it's hard to distribute, no one wants to take a big book and this and that. So, but the point is that, but then those disappeared. But then the point of why the book was like that, that was not understood. It was prestigious. They always, oh, we're not preaching to the professionals, and that Prabhupada was. We were. You understand? I mean, who are the first people who Prabhupada was speaking to? Right? I mean, you had your hippies, but who were the first ones? Right? Intellectuals, you know, musicians, all these guys who were very smart and top class people. And then from there, then branches out. But Prabhupada had no problem working with why? Because he understood what now we're saying we're not preaching to those people, we're not able to address. Is that Prabhupada's fault? No, that's our fault. Prabhupada was talking to them. Why aren't we still talking to them? So we always have to see. We have to be very careful. We must reject the narrow and bigoted idea that there's nothing more to know. The most important point is to always fully depend on the mercy of the Supreme Spiritual Master residing in the heart. Right? So in other words, Krishna is the Supreme Spiritual Master. And we know him through the Spiritual Master. Verses 36 to 38. The Lord now describes the fruits of transcendental knowledge. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was afraid of sinful reactions and going to hell. Verse 36 explains that even if one is the greatest sinner, he can cross the ocean of nescience by proper understanding one's constitutional position in relationship to Krishna. Such knowledge of self, super self, and their relationship, sambandha jnana, like fire, will burn the reaction of all material activities. Verse 37. And then in the note, verse 36 explains that Brahma Vidya destroys the sinful reactions. In verse 37, it is stated that Brahma Vidya destroys all karma, even the punya karmas. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary that jnana destroys the aparabdha karma, but not the prarabdha karma. Bhakti destroys both. Right? In other words, what's not manifest may be destroyed by knowledge, but what is manifest is not going to go away. You wouldn't want it to go away, because if you got rid of your prarabdha karma, you wouldn't have a body. Like that, that's part of the prarabdha karma deal. Right? You have a body, you have a mind, intelligence, senses, that's all prarabdha karma. So, you want to leave that alone. Yes?
What does it mean that bhakti destroys prarabdha karma also?
Because it will dissolve and you will not get another material body. You only get a spiritual. While the other one will destroy those other things, but you'll still get material bodies. You know, it only deals with part of it. It doesn't get rid of everything. because it gets rid of the, it may get rid of the results, but it doesn't get rid of the desire. So the desire will again fructify. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have weeds in the field and you just go and you know, clip the grass, they still grow. So you can say, wow, you know, yeah, no weeds. But no, they're still there. So bhakti is like going in and with a hoe and digging them out so there's no roots. Then nothing grows.
So the desire is part of the parabdha karma, like that?
It's the effect. It means you do an activity, it generates the desire to do it again. So that lies as seed. So you can get rid of all the other things, but you can't get rid of that. So it's, yeah. Devotee who is situated in this knowledge enjoys it within himself in the due course of time. In verse 38, Krishna uses the word kalena, in due course of time, because Arjuna wanted to renounce prematurely. This is a warning for those who think that just by changing their dress they can become truly detached and accomplished in transcendental knowledge. Right, so in other words, with this proper knowledge, you situate yourself in the situation you're in. In other words, what's missing in day-to-day life is not necessarily technique, it's knowledge. Right? So nowadays, knowledge is being taught to improve the quality of one's life, but what's being taught is the skill. But that's not actually the knowledge that's missing. Of course, if that knowledge is missing, yes, you know. You know, you keep picking up the wrong end of a knife, so a little bit of, you know, how you say, skill may be, you know, important. But the point is it still will not give you that happiness and satisfaction. Why do people do it? I will be happy. I will be satisfied. But they're still not. Why? Because it's not connected to Krishna. Right? So then in here is that knowledge, that will burn up the reactions. That will make it easier, but still you have to cultivate the devotion. That's why always remember Krishna is there. The knowledge is to never forget, because out of ignorance you forget. So if you have knowledge, you don't forget. But just because you haven't forgotten him doesn't mean it's favorable, it's devotional. So they go together. Right? Does that make sense? So be conscious of Krishna, how do you say? Be favorably conscious of Krishna. That's never forget, right? And that it's done to please Krishna, and it's not done for karma and jnana, and that brings out that devotional side. Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta. Bhakti Rindiki, Tide, Tide, Gold, Tide.